Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to Locked On Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Carter Rodriguez. I'm guest hosting for Chris Manning. And we're going to take a look at tonight's Warriors-Cavaliers drubbing on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. This one probably wasn't too fun for very many Cavs fans. But in a way, based on kind of what I saw on Twitter, it seemed like people were actually kind of ready for this. The Cavs were ending a six-game road trip. The Warriors hadn't played since Thursday. They hadn't played away from home since January 8th. It's now the 16th, so they were ready for this game. And the Cavaliers definitely came out flat. They came out sloppy. And honestly, they haven't really played particularly well over the course of this road trip. Yet another game where they just weren't able to move the ball at all. Though the Warriors kind of are the death to ball movement because they just switch everything when they have their lineups featuring, you know, four or five guys that are 6'7" and lengthy and switchy. And really the onus is on the offense to attack those mismatches. But overall, this was a drubbing. The Warriors won 126-91. It was over by half, probably before half, to be honest. It was very, very clear who was going to win this game pretty early on. So we can move right into our three takeaways. First takeaway, it's really hard to evaluate a blowout. You know, you can look at the fact that Kyrie went 6 of 19, or Iman Shumpert shot 2 of 5 from 3, or even that Curry and Klay got, you know, went off for 46 combined points and 10 made threes, but it all feels a little hollow in a blowout this thorough to evaluate anything at a granular level. It's the fact of the matter is the Cavaliers, almost every Cavalier did not play well tonight, and almost every Warrior played well. There was an energy difference. There was a crispness difference. When a blowout is so thorough, especially when it's related to so specifically related to energy, it's really hard to evaluate. I said this on Twitter in a conversation with someone. I said that, you know, trying to draw conclusions from a game like this is like being a doctor and drawing a medical conclusion from a really bad study. It's kind of dangerous to do that. For example, the Cavs only had 7 offensive rebounds today and the Warriors had 11 offensive rebounds. Have the Warriors figured out how to keep the Cavs off the glass? Probably not. But they killed them tonight, which, you know, there's just going to be a lot of stats kind of in that realm that are just going to be, frankly, unreliable. And most of the analysis is going to be unreliable just because this was an outlier game. I guess some people might think that the Warriors are 35 points better than the Cavs. I'm certainly not one of those, and I can't imagine almost anyone that's reasonable thinks that on a regular basis. But this series, and this is the 19th meeting between these two teams in the last 3 seasons, which is pretty insane, given that these guys only play twice a year in the regular season. But that when you have 19 games going bad at each other, you would think that in a very contentious series, you would think there would be more close games. But really, this is a series that has been defined by alternating blowouts, where one team just completely gets the better of the other one, whether it's schematically or effort-wise or both. The finals is a great, this last year's finals is a great microcosm of that. The three of the four Cavs wins were blowouts. I think three of the Warriors wins were blowouts. It's just, you know, for whatever reason, when one team has it, the other team doesn't, when these two play each other. And other than the last two meetings, which were insanely close, settled by 4 points and 1 point, respectively, most of these have been blowouts. And with the Warriors, especially in the regular season, definitely getting a few more of those. And I think a big part of that is that the Warriors, this sounds like a slight, like a little tongue-in-cheek Cavs slight, but it's not. The Warriors are really built to be unbelievable in the regular season because they thrive in the chaos that comes with a random Monday night game in January. And they also thrive on teams not doing well-scouted, dirty work on them. If you don't run them off the three-point line with insane intensity, they roast you. And that's why, to some extent, they haven't looked as great in the playoffs, I think, because teams are running you off the line a lot harder. It's a lot harder to run cute action when the other team has been scouting you for days and days on end and has, you know, 5, 6, 7 games to get to know what you're running. So any new wrinkles are really hard, you know, for a team to scout in one day with no practice. I think the Cavs have practiced once in the last, like, 8 days for a frame of reference. So it just makes them inherently a very good regular season team, and one, and they're already prone to blowing teams out because of their ability to rack up 4 or 5 threes in, you know, 7, 8 possessions, and their defense is just really, really good. And they're all really good at the point of attack, which really helps. So if they're locked in, they're really going to muck up a good ball movement offense, and they did that tonight. And so I think the tendency is to draw big conclusions from a blowout, and to some extent, you know, a lot of people have been making fun of Cavs fans on Twitter for explaining why this game doesn't matter, and it does matter, but it is hard to learn any lessons of value going forward. Other than what we kind of already knew, which is not really quite sure what the Cavs are going to do with Kevin Durant. If the Warriors put Steph Curry on the ball running pick and roll, he's a hell of a lot harder to manage than when he's running off ball, curling around screens where you can just kind of mug him because the refs don't call off ball fouls unless they really, really have to. And even then, they don't. So I don't think this game taught us a ton, but other than the fact that blowouts are just really hard to navigate. Something to keep an eye on, though, in terms of, you know, if I can be completely hypocritical, something to keep an eye on here is that the Warriors really went out of their way to attack Kyle Korver whenever he played tonight when he was on defense. They ran him through a ton of actions. They tried to get him switched on to Steph. They just, in general, they tried to burn him, and they did a really good job of that. And Korver, even though he's a smart team defender, isn't the defender he used to be. He wasn't a good defender for the Hawks this year. A lot of their lineup data suggested that was the case. But I also don't think it's going to be as bad as this in the finals. I saw some people kind of positing the theory that, you know, maybe he really can't play against this team, and I just think that's a little absurd. There's always hiding spots on this Warriors team. You can, you know, if they have Zaza, Pachulia, and Andre Iguodala out there, you put Love on Pachulia and you put Korver on Iggy. And he's a smart team defender, so he knows how to help and recover and track a guy off screens and things like that. He's just not athletically what he used to be, which is fine. And honestly, I think a big part of why he looks so bad is everyone on the Cavs knows every play the Warriors run, almost every single play. They have played so much. They have played at the highest level. Each team knows each other's playbooks in and out for the most part, and it just comes down to execution. Korver doesn't have that advantage. He has only played the Warriors. This is his third time playing the Warriors, I believe, unless he played them with the Hawks. He might have. So third or fourth time in the last 2 years. That's quite a big difference between 11. And so he doesn't know what they run as well, which makes him more susceptible to the actions that they run. And I think as he gets more reps against them in a presumed finals matchup, not to, you know, discount anyone out west or, you know, even the Raptors or Celtics if, you know, somehow they are able to knock off the Cavs. But you would imagine he'll get more comfortable out there defensively. And the Cavs have run out guys that don't grade out well as defenders against this Warriors team, and they've survived based on good half-court discipline. And it stands to reason that you can get Kyle Korver up to speed on that one. So second takeaway, they attacked Kyle Korver, and it might be a problem, but we don't know if it is yet. And then finally, the third takeaway, probably the most interesting thing that happened all night, and a good podcast producer probably would have led with this, but I'm not a good podcast producer. That's why I'm just guest hosting. But LeBron James and Draymond Green had yet another incident. LeBron was taking the ball down the middle of the court. Draymond went in for a steal, and there was a pretty big collision. And LeBron, of course, as he is wont to do, and I'm sorry, Cavs fans, he does do this. He certainly milked the contact for all it was worth. He laid down and put his head in his arms and really absorbed the blow. And you know, he did get hit, and it's very worth noting that. But he definitely sold it. There's no way around that. Everyone made fun of him on Twitter all night, perhaps rightfully so. And he earned, and Draymond Green got a flagrant foul for it. And even Draymond even mocked LeBron, LeBron's flail to members of the crowd nearby. But I think the third takeaway here is that LeBron James knows exactly the kind of relationship Draymond Green has with officials. And they know that he knows that they are not quick to give that guy the benefit of the doubt. And really, rightfully, not. But when you look at the fact that there's no way to guarantee that the way he sold the call earned Draymond the flagrant, but I think it certainly didn't hurt. And when you combine that with the step over last season that led to the nut shot heard around the world, that led to Draymond getting suspended for Game 5 for passing the flagrant foul limit for the playoffs. It's very clear that LeBron James is trying to bait Draymond into dumb decisions and to bait him into getting flagrants and technicals. And I think it's pretty clear that Draymond can be emotionally compromised. And I think even the most ardent Warriors supporters would agree with me on that. He plays with his heart on his sleeve. It's part of what makes him great, but it also has gotten him into quite a bit of trouble, and LeBron James knows that. And I think that my guess is if he gets a little hip check from Clay, he's not selling it quite like that. He said after the game that he didn't even see it, who was coming and who hit him, and brushed it off saying he was a football player, because of course LeBron has to be a little tiring. But I think it's very clear that he has found an inefficiency in the Warriors system, and he's certainly going to attack it. And in this instance, the inefficiency is Draymond Green's psyche. I think that it'll be really interesting to see that if they can find something to exploit, if Draymond's temper costs the Warriors again in a prospective finals rematch. Now, I mean, if you're an odds maker, it's more likely it doesn't. And it's just, you know, some trash talk here and there, and, you know, maybe some hard fouls, but not something that's going to swing a finals, like having your second or third best player suspended for a finals game. I would be shocked if that manifests like that. But at the same time, any advantage this Cavs team can get against one of the most talented teams ever compiled is an important one. And I think it's very clear that LeBron James is aware of that. All right, now we're going to go to player. Napa know-how.
It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.
Of the game, I tossed a few of these kind of back and forth in my head. I looked at Steph Curry. He had 20 points, 11 assists, 4 steals. Klay had 26 points on 17 shots. Durant was his efficient self with 21, 6, 5, and 3. Draymond had a triple-double with 5 blocks. Just like my first takeaway saying it's hard to evaluate a blowout, let's just give player of the game to the entire Warriors team. They showed up, and they came ready to play. I've talked about this a little bit in my preview for Fearless Sword, but this was really the first game in a long time where the Warriors were the team with something to prove, at least in my eye. I guess it's up for debate. But I felt like after the first finals when the Warriors won in 6, the Cavs had to kind of prove that they could beat them with Kyrie and Love. And then they lost both their regular season matchups, and then they had to prove it in the finals. And obviously those are, you know, the ultimate prove-it moments. And then even on Christmas, they had to prove, I think in their heads, that they could beat that they were still better than this team or still as good as this team, even with Kevin Durant added. So after 4 straight wins, the burden of proof of being good enough was finally on the Warriors. And as I talked about with how the Warriors are prone to regular season blowout wins in the first place, the Cavaliers are just as prone to those bad losses. When they're not insanely motivated or they come in a little entitled, I'm not saying that's what happened, but just as a general rule, they get smoked. They'll lose to teams they should not lose to, and they can often lose in ugly fashion. Their effort is not always consistent. Even, you know, some people thought that might go away with Tyronn Lue as opposed to David Blatt, but I was always pretty skeptical of that because LeBron's teams did this in Miami. For whatever reason, it is just kind of a standard byproduct of a LeBron team at this point that every now and again they're just going to get a little too big for their britches and get blown up, get the doors blown off them. That's not every time, but and I'm not saying that's what happened today, but it's certainly possible. And the Warriors had something to prove, and I think they kind of needed a big win more than the Cavs did, and I think it manifested in a 35-point win. Obviously, the Warriors were great, and the Cavs were not great. I don't really want to take anything away from the Warriors because they played an unbelievable game, and that's why their whole starting lineup gets Player of the Game honors, even though that's a little silly. Moving over to Wine and Gold winners, I only got one Wine and Gold winner, and that is Richard Jefferson. This guy, and he's a Wine and Gold winner because he is always about that life. This guy has gotten so many technical fouls this season, barking at the refs, barking at players. Last year in the playoffs, he shook a closed fist at Jonas Valanciunas, he pointed a finger right in Jonas Valanciunas' face. He was in Draymond's face after the altercation with LeBron. This guy is always ready to go. And it's funny because he is branded, rightfully such, as this fun-loving guy, like Snapchatting RJ, like heart and soul of the team. Just like this fun guy who kind of helped break up the cliques of the team along with Channing Frye. But this dude is a competitor, and it's really fun to see how heated he gets and how competitive he is. I mean, he got teed up on Christmas for winking at Durant after posterizing on him. And he's back again, right in the thick of it. He's ride or die. There's no way around it. If RJ's your buddy and you're about to get into a fight, don't recommend it. But if you are about to get into a fight, we know that Richard Jefferson is going to throw hands on your behalf or at least hold you back. So RJ gets Wine and Gold winner. honors, well deserved. The Cavs are finally coming home after a very long road trip. They've got, I believe, five of their next six at home. They're hosting the Suns on Thursday, so they get a couple days off and then host the Suns on Thursday. Then they host the Spurs on Saturday. That'll be the next big game. That'll be on ABC primetime. And you would expect that the Cavs get home and finally find a little time to practice. They haven't really had a lot of practice time, especially since Kyle Korver's joined the team. I think they've only had one practice with him on the roster. And they kind of need to rediscover themselves. Their offense has not looked good recently. A lot of single-digit assist games, games where you have more turnovers than assists. And it's fair to think that they're going to turn that around here in the near future. It's not panic time for this team. They are this team is unbelievably talented. They're going to figure it out. This just happens for most teams. They go through little swoons and dips where they kind of lose their way and just need to. And because they're good, they'll figure it out. And it's fair to expect them to. So that'll be it for Locked On Cavs. I've been Carter Rodriguez, guest hosting for Chris Manning. Thank you to Chris for letting me on. I wish the game was better, but that's the way it goes sometimes. So we'll see the Cavs next on Thursday, hosting the Suns. And that's all for me. You can find me on Twitter, @Carter_Shade. And go Cavs! Rock your motherfucking NBA!